Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I came to America looking for freedom and freedom of speech, freedom of everything, you know what I mean? To be held here in this place for saying free Palestine, ceasefire now. That was like a kind of a shock to me, because that's not the America that I heard of.
Calls are growing for the Trump administration to release Lekha Cordia, who's been held by ICE for nearly a year. She was recently hospitalized after suffering a seizure, the first of her life. She was detained after taking part in pro-Palestine protests at Columbia University. We'll speak with her attorney. Then, the Alabama solution.
I want to tell you that your son was murdered. They sweep stuff underneath the rug all the time.
If you're an inmate in Alabama prison, you're probably praying every night that nothing bad happens to you. It's dangerous and volatile. It could explode at any moment.
I mean, it's corrupt. That's all you can say.
What do we finish with?
Film me.
Why?
A stunning new documentary takes viewers inside what's been described as America's deadliest prison system. The Oscar-nominated film is based on footage secretly recorded on cell phones by prisoners locked up in Alabama. Some of the men featured in the film were recently sent to solitary confinement. We'll speak to the film's co-directors, Andrew Jarecki and Charlotte Kaufman, and a lawyer in Alabama who represents some of the men featured in the film, The Alabama Solution. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. military is planning for possible strikes on Iran that could last for weeks if President Trump orders the attack. That's according to two U.S. officials speaking to Reuters. It comes amidst a CBS News report that President Trump informed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu during his meeting at Mar-a-Lago in December that the U.S. would back Israeli strikes against Iran's ballistic missile program if the U.S. can't reach a deal with Iran. Meanwhile, in an interview with the BBC, Iran's deputy foreign minister, Majid Takhravanshi, said his country is willing to make compromises to reach a nuclear deal with the U.S. in exchange for the lifting of sanctions. On Saturday, 250,000 people rallied in Germany on the sidelines of the Munich Security Conference, protesting against Iran's government following a call from Iran's exiled Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi. At the conference, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham called for regime change in Iran.
If we back out now, it'll be the biggest mistake we've made, far worse than the Syrian red line. Far worse than Afghanistan. You can't say, keep protesting, we got you back, help's on the way, and nothing happened. That's why I'm confident that President Trump will get an outcome consistent with those three statements through diplomacy or military force.
Israeli forces have killed at least 11 Palestinians in Gaza over the past 24 hours. Since the U.S. brokered ceasefire last October, Israel's killed over 600 Palestinians and wounded over 1,600, according to the Palestinian Health Ministry. This is Alia Nabayuk, whose son was killed in Israeli airstrikes.
And
Do you believe there's a board of peace? Do you believe that Trump will come to help us or defend us? The one who's supplying Israel with all sorts of deadly weapons, supplying it with money, with political support, with protection, and with an international umbrella. Do you believe that there is peace that Trump or someone else would provide for us?
On Sunday, President Trump announced members of his so-called Board of Peace have pledged $5 billion towards rebuilding Gaza. Indonesia's military said it's committing up to 8,000 troops to be deployed in Gaza by the end of June. Meanwhile, Doctors Without Borders, Médecins Sans Frontières, known as MSF, has halted some of its non-essential medical operations at Nasser Hospital in Gaza after staff and patients reported seeing armed men inside the facility. Since the October 10th ceasefire between Israel and Hamas, the organization says, quote, MSF teams have reported a pattern of unacceptable acts, including the presence of armed men, intimidation, arbitrary arrests of patients, and a recent situation of suspicion of movement of weapons, unquote. Last month, Israel ordered MSF and 30 other international groups to cease operations in Gaza and the occupied West Bank if they did not agree to new rules that include sharing information about staff. Doctors Without Borders says it did not submit a list of its staffers in Gaza since Israel could not guarantee their safety. In the occupied West Bank, the Oscar-winning Palestinian director of No Other Land says his family has been attacked again by Israeli settlers, leaving his brother hospitalized and four members of his family arrested by the Israeli army. Hamdan Bilal says the violence began on Sunday when Israeli settlers began attacking his family's home in the village of Sisya. Bilal says the settlers' raid was led by the same man who previously attacked him last March, injuring his head and stomach after Bilal's film made global headlines for winning an Academy Award. Bilal says his brother called police only to have soldiers from the Israeli army raid the home, attacking everyone inside. The violence came hours after Israel's government approved a plan to allow land registration in the West Bank for the first time since 1967, paving the way for Israel to annex Palestinian lands. Israeli human rights groups warn the land registration process will facilitate the dispossession and displacement of Palestinians in violation of international law. A U.S. military strike killed three people and blew up a boat in the Caribbean Friday, according to U.S. Southern Command. The U.S. military said the boat was allegedly following drug trafficking routes, unquote, without providing any evidence. Since September, the Pentagon's conducted 39 strikes against boats they say are smuggling drugs in the Caribbean and Eastern Pacific, killing at least 133 people, again without providing evidence. On Sunday, the Pentagon announced U.S. forces raided a sanctioned oil tanker in the Indian Ocean after tracking the vessel in the Caribbean in an effort to target oil ship from Venezuela. The Trump administration's been seizing tankers in order to take control of Venezuela's oil. It comes as the Wall Street Journal reports the Pentagon used Anthropic's artificial intelligence tool Claude in its operation to abduct Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro. The Pentagon was able to use Claude through Anthropic's partnership with the data company Palantir. A spokesman for Anthropic told the Wall Street Journal the company's, quote, committed to using frontier AI in support of U.S. national security, unquote. In southwestern Russia, Ukrainian drone strikes set off fires at the Black Sea port of Taman on Sunday, an attack that wounded two people and damaged an oil storage tanker warehouse and terminals. Elsewhere, debris from Russian drones damaged infrastructure in Ukraine's Odessa region, disrupting water and electricity supplies to civilians. The violence comes ahead of a new round of U.S. brokered talks involving Russian and Ukrainian envoys who will meet in Geneva Tuesday and Wednesday. Meanwhile, a report by UK and European nations issued Saturday finds Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny's death in a Siberian penal colony in 2024 was likely due to a deadly toxin found in the skin of Ecuadorian poison dart frogs. The toxin was reportedly found in smuggled samples taken from Navalny's body. Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio offered contrasting visions of America's role in the world at the Munich Security Conference in Germany over the weekend. Congressmember Ocasio-Cortez sharply criticized U.S. foreign policy and tied rising income inequality to authoritarianism around the world.
They are looking to withdraw the United States from the entire world so that we can turn into an age of authoritarianisms, of authoritarians that can carve out the world where Donald Trump can command the Western Hemisphere and Latin America as his personal sandbox, where Putin can saber rattle around Europe and try to bully around our own allies there, and for essentially authoritarians to have their own geographic domains.
Meanwhile, Secretary of State Marco Rubio cast immigration as an existential threat to both Europe and the U.S.
In the pursuit of a world without borders, we opened our doors to an unprecedented wave of mass migration that threatens the cohesion of our societies, the continuity of our culture, and the future of our people. We made these mistakes together. And now, together, we owe it to our people to face those facts and to move forward to rebuild.
The Trump administration's planning to spend more than $38 billion to acquire warehouses across the U.S. in order to retrofit them into new ICE jails with capacity for tens of thousands of prisoners. 16 large buildings will be converted into regional processing centers, jailing more than 1,000 immigrants at a time, with a further 8 large detention centers capable of holding 7 to 10,000 prisoners for an average of 2 months. That's according to documents first revealed by The Washington Post. This comes as a Reuters review found hundreds of judges around the United States have ruled more than 4,400 times since October that President Trump's administration is detaining immigrants unlawfully. Yet the administration's continued jailing people indefinitely, even after courts rule the policy is illegal. In Minnesota, 2 ICE agents have been suspended and face a criminal investigation into whether they lied to a jury about shooting a Venezuelan immigrant last month. The officers claimed Julio Cesar Sosa Celis and his cousin, Alfredo Alejandro Aljorno, attacked them with a snow shovel and a broom after a traffic stop on January 14th, and said one of the officers fired in self-defense. Shortly after the shooting, Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem described it as, quote, an attempted murder of federal law enforcement, unquote. But video evidence directly contradicts claims the men attacked federal agents. So Cicelli says he had retreated into his home and was shot in the leg while in the process of closing and locking the door. On Thursday, a federal judge dismissed felony assault charges against the cousins after the U.S. attorney in Minneapolis said newly discovered evidence had contradicted the officer's testimony and after ICE admitted the federal agents made false statements under oath. The Department of Homeland Security entered a partial shutdown early Saturday morning after Senate Democrats refused to support a DHS funding bill. They're pressuring Republicans to agree to tighter controls on immigration enforcement, including requiring federal agents to wear identification, get judicial warrants to enter private property, and to stop wearing masks. About 90% of the more than 260,000 employees at DHS are deemed essential workers, meaning they'll be required to work, though they could miss paychecks if the shutdown lasts for weeks. That includes nearly 60,000 airport security workers with the TSA and nearly 20,000 staff at the Federal Emergency Management Agency, known as FEMA. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to return Babson College student Ani Lucia Lopez Beosa to the United States after she was wrongfully deported to Honduras in November. At the time, Lopez Beosa was trying to fly from Boston to her home in Houston, Texas, to surprise her family for Thanksgiving. She was told there was an issue with her boarding pass at the gate, before she was detained by federal immigration agents. She was taken to Texas and deported to Honduras 2 days later, despite a court order blocking her removal while her case was pending. Judge Richard Stearns has given the Trump administration 2 weeks to facilitate Annie's return to the United States. His order comes after a federal prosecutor admitted in January ICE had mistakenly deported her. Healthcare advocates are calling on Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. to resign after he downplayed the risks of COVID-19 by saying he, quote, used to snort cocaine off of toilet seats, unquote. RFK Jr. made the remark in an interview with the podcaster Theo Vaughn.
I'm not scared of a germ. You know, I used to snort cocaine off of toilet seats.
Protect Our Care said in response, quote, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. continues to lay bare why he's the most dangerous, in over his head, ill-suited person ever to lead such an important federal agency that has life and death power, unquote. This comes after the Food and Drug Administration last week blocked review of a flu vaccine developed by Moderna using the same mRNA technology that led to the rapid development of vaccines against COVID. The review was blocked by Vinay Prasad, a vaccine skeptic handpicked by RFK Jr. last May to lead the division of the FDA that oversees vaccine regulation. Former President Barack Obama has responded publicly to a racist video shared on social media by President Trump, which depicts the Obamas as apes. In a podcast hosted by Brian Tyler Cohen and published on Saturday, Barack Obama refused to directly address the video, but said many people, quote, find this behavior deeply disturbing.
There's this sort of clown show that's happening in social media and on television. And what is true is that there doesn't seem to be any shame about this.
Although the White House took down the video after about 12 hours, President Trump refused to apologize for sharing it. The Senate's only black Republican, Tim Scott, said, quote, it's the most racist thing I've seen out of this White House, unquote. Reuters is reporting the director of the White House Office of Management and Budget, Russell Vogt, is using $15 million of what remains of USAID's operating expenses to fund his security detail. A source tells Reuters Vogt's detail includes more than a dozen U.S. marshals. Russ Vogt is the chief architect of Project 2025, which outlined the Trump administration's plans to downsize federal agencies and fire thousands of federal workers. Last year, the Trump administration dismantled USAID, canceled most of its aid programs around the world, and fired about 10,000 workers. The Trump administration's decision to shut down USAID resulted in hundreds of thousands of deaths from infectious diseases and malnutrition around the world. And in California, thousands of San Francisco public school workers ended their strike Friday after 4 days on the picket line. United Educators of San Francisco announced a tentative agreement with the school district that included fully funded health care starting in 2027 and higher wages. The union represents some 6,000 teachers, librarians, social workers and nurses from more than 100 schools across San Francisco. It was the city's first teacher strike in nearly half a century. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now! DemocracyNow.org, The War and Peace Report. Coming up, calls are growing for the Trump administration to release La Concordia. She's been jailed by ICE for nearly a year, was recently hospitalized after suffering a seizure. She was detained after taking part in pro-Palestine protests at Columbia University. Stay with us. This raat du vidai daya khile sagal jagata pavan guru pani by Sunny Singh in our Democracy Now! Studio. On Monday, February 23rd, Democracy Now! Will be celebrating our 30th anniversary at the historic Riverside Church in New York. Guests will include Sunny Singh, Angela Davis, Naomi Klein, Maria Ressa, Michael Stipe, Wynton Marsalis, Mosaba Boutoha, V, Hooray for the Riff Raff, and more. Go to democracynow.org for more information. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show looking at growing demands for the release of Laqa Korda. She's a 33-year-old Palestinian woman who's been in ICE detention for nearly a year. She was arrested during the 2024 Gaza Solidarity protests at Columbia University, but the charges were later dropped. Then, last March, Korda was detained at an ICE check-in in Newark, New Jersey. Federal immigration officers said her student visa had expired. She's been jailed at ICE's Prairieland Detention Facility in North Texas since. She's the only person who remains in detention from the Columbia-Gaza Solidarity mobilizations. Laqa Korda recently suffered a seizure in the ICE jail. She was hospitalized for 3 days with her family and legal team desperately searching for her, while ICE refused to share information about her whereabouts. In a statement released by her legal team, Laqa Korda said her hands and legs were shackled the entire time she was hospitalized, including when she went to the bathroom. "I felt like an animal," she said. Laqa writes in the statement, quote, "The hospital told me I was more prone to seizures because of poor sleep, inadequate nutrition, and stress. The doctor advised me to reduce my stress and eat food to avoid a future seizure. I don't know how I can do that while I'm confined," she said. She went on, "At Prairieland, your daily life, whether you can have access to the food or medicine you need or even a good night's sleep, is controlled by the private for-profit business that runs this facility." She said, "We live in filthy conditions. The best medicine for me and everyone else here is our freedom." She concluded, "The only reason ICE targeted me in the first place is because I protested against the Israeli government's genocide in Gaza. Even now, U.S.-made bombs continue to destroy Palestinian homes and kill Palestinian families." Those were the words of Laqa Korda. In December, NPR's Radio Diaries aired part of a phone call between Korda and her cousin Hamza Abu Shaban, who's been in touch with her regularly throughout her detention.
"I received a call from my mother telling me there are people asking for you from the government. At the beginning, I thought like they're missing a form or something. Okay, I'm just going to solve this issue and then like I'll have my green card soon. But they took my my fingerprints and all that. They said, 'You're going to Texas.' I said, 'Texas? Like, that's really far away.' And when I arrived to Texas, the place was overcrowded."
How many people are there with you?
"So right now we're 87. And the capacity of this place is 37. It's a lot of people sleeping on the floor."
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe another word to describe this place, a big bathroom. It's open. Everything is open. There is no privacy."
The Department of Homeland Security's refused to release Laqa Korda on bond despite multiple court orders. Last week, New York City Mayor Zohran Mamdani wrote, quote, online, "Laqa Korda has spent nearly a year in an ICE prison for exercising her First Amendment rights in NYC and speaking out against the ongoing genocide in Palestine. She was hospitalized after suffering a seizure. Now she's back in detention. This is cruel and unnecessary. Release Laqa now," Mayor Mamdani wrote. For more, we're joined by Sarah Sherman Stokes, Laqa Korda's immigration attorney. She's associate director and clinical associate professor at the Boston University School of Law. Sarah, thanks so much for being with us. Laqa Korda has been in prison for almost a year, has been in an ICE jail. Tell us about the circumstances, about her being hospitalized, about you and the family not being able to find her when she was first hospitalized. Please give us the details.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for those questions. LaCacordia is a young woman. She is a daughter. She is a sister. She is a cousin. She is a devout woman of faith. Her faith is very important to her. She's a proud Palestinian woman. Hearing her voice at the top of the hour and again now, I'm reminded also what an advocate she is. And so I think it's important to start with that. Despite that, unfortunately, on Friday, February 7th, Laka had a seizure. This was on the heels of being sick, of months of malnutrition and poor conditions at the Prairie Land Detention Center. She had a seizure. She was taken to the hospital. The family was alerted by someone who had been formerly detained at Prairie Land. The women inside, they look out for each other, and Laka is no exception. She is constantly advocating for the other women inside. But Laka was rushed to the hospital, and for 72 hours, we did not know where she was. The legal team and her family put in repeated calls and emails to ICE. We were ignored. The emails went unanswered. Ultimately, ICE told us that it would be a safety issue if they were to reveal either her condition or her whereabouts, which was sort of a bewildering statement because shortly thereafter, ICE revealed to a reporter where Laka was being kept, where she was hospitalized. We only found out where she was through that reporter. But through it all, we had no idea whether she was, frankly, whether she was alive or dead. This has been the deadliest time for people in ICE detention since President Trump took office for a second time. 36 people have died in ICE custody, and we were worried that Laka would be 37.
This is her first seizure, the one that she had in jail?
That's correct. This is the first seizure she's ever had in her life. In fact, she's been a relatively healthy person physically until she was detained by ICE nearly a year ago. In ICE custody, unsurprisingly, her health has deteriorated significantly. She's lost weight. She's been unable to eat. Her repeated requests for halal food have been denied. She's forced to live on snacks from the commissary, which depends on her family providing her basically a weekly allowance so that she can supplement her calories. Because the food that they provide at the facility is inedible and also doesn't conform to her dietary needs. So she has been really unwell, as have many other women in that detention facility.
Let's go back to hear more of LaCacordia in her own words. In this excerpt from NPR's radio diary, she talked about the charges she faces and how ICE has appealed her release.
The charges were only about immigration. So if it's only about immigration, I'm fine. I'm going to be out very soon. The judge ruled that I should be released. And ICE appealed the same day, saying that I'm dangerous. I went for a protest and all that. The second time, the judge ruled immediate release again. And again, ICE appealed the same day. It's just like a slap on the face. Because I came to America looking for freedom and freedom of speech, freedom of everything. You know what I mean? To be held here in this place for saying free Palestine, ceasefire now. That was like a kind of a shock to me because that's not the America that I heard of.
So that's LaCacordia in her own words. Again, in the New York Times, a judge twice ruling she's not a threat to the U.S. and could be released on a $20,000 bond. You told the New York Times government lawyers have twice filed a rarely used provision known as an automatic stay, which keeps a person detained during the appeals process. So what can get Laka out?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Laka has been, as you said, Laka has been ordered released twice by the immigration judge. The government has all but completely abandoned